Chapter 5. In the condominium apartment in Carmel, which the bluff-playing group of bindmen, Pretty Blue Fox, owned jointly, Mrs. Freya Gaines, making herself comfortable, not sitting too close to her husband Clem, watched the others arrive one by one. Bill Calamine, sauntering aggressively through the open door in his loud sports shirt and tie, nodded to her and Clem.
"Greetings."
His wife and bluff partner Arlene followed after him, a preoccupied frown of worry on her rather wrinkled face. Arlene had taken advantage of the Hines operation somewhat later in life than had the others.
"Hiya,"
Walt Remington said gloomily, glancing furtively around as he entered with his alert, bright-eyed wife Janice.
"I understand we've got a new member,"
he said in a self-conscious, uncomfortable voice. Guilt was written all over him as he shakily removed his coat and laid it over a chair.
"Yes," Freya said to him. "And you know why," she thought.
Now the sandy-haired baby of the group, Stuart Marks, put in his appearance, and with him his tall, masculine, no-nonsense wife Yule, wearing a black suede leather jacket and jeans.
"I was listening to Nat's Cats," Stuart said, "and he said—"
"He was correct,"
Clem Gaines answered.
"Lucky Luckman is already on the West Coast setting up residence in Berkeley."
Carrying a bottle of whiskey wrapped up in a paper bag, Sylvanus Angst strolled in, smiling broadly at everyone, in a good mood, as always. And immediately after him came swarthy Jack Blau, his dark eyes flickering as he looked at everyone in the room. He jerked his head in greeting but did not speak. Jean, his wife, greeted Freya.
"You might be interested. We looked into the business of getting Pete a new wife. We were with Straw Man Special for 2 whole hours today."
"Any luck?" Freya asked, trying to make her voice sound casual.
"Yes," Jean Blau said. "There's a woman named Carol Holt coming over from Straw Man Special this evening. She should be here any time."
"What's she like?" Freya said, preparing herself. Jean said,
"Intelligent."
"I mean," Freya said, "what does she look like?"
"Brown hair, small. I really can't describe her. Why don't you just wait?"
Jean glanced toward the door, and there stood Pete Garden. He had come in and was standing listening.
"Hi,"
Freya said to him. "They found you a wife." Pete said to Jean,
"Thanks."
His voice was gruff.
"Well, you must have a partner to play," Jean pointed out.
"I'm not sore," Pete said.
Like Sylvanus Angst, he carried a bottle wrapped up in a paper bag. He now set it down on the sideboard next to Sylvanus's and took off his coat.
"In fact, I'm glad," he said.
Sylvanus giggled and said,
"What Pete's worried about is the man who got hold of the Berkeley deed, isn't it, Pete? Lucky Luckman, they say."
Short and plump, Sylvanus waddled over to Freya and stroked her hair.
"You worried too?"
Carefully disengaging Angst's fingers from her hair, Freya said,
"I certainly am. It's a terrible thing."
"It is," Jean Blau agreed. "We'd better discuss it before Luckman gets here. There must be something we can do."
"Refuse to seat him?" Angst said. "Refuse to play against him?"
Freya said, "No vital deeds should be offered during the play. His getting a toehold here in California is bad enough. If he gains more—"
"We mustn't permit it,"
Jack Blau agreed. He glared at Walt Remington. "How could you do it? We ought to expel you. And you're such a jackass, you probably haven't got any idea what you've done."
"He understands," Bill Calamine said. "He didn't intend to. He sold to brokers, and they right away—"
"That's no excuse," Jack Blau said.
Clem Gaines said,
"Yeah, one thing we can do, we can insist that he submit to an EEG. I took the liberty of bringing a machine along. That might bar him. We ought to be able to bar him somehow."
"Should we check with U.S. Cummings and see if it has any idea?" Jean Blau asked.
I know it's contrary to their intentions to have one man dominate both coasts. They were upset when Luckman pushed Joe Schilling out of New York City, in fact. I remember that distinctly.
I'd prefer not to turn to the Vugs, Bill Columine said. He looked around at the group.
Anybody else have any ideas? Speak up.
There was an uneasy silence.
Aw, come on, Stuart Marks said. Can't we just, he gestured, you know, scare him physically? There's six men here against one.
After a pause, Bill Columine said,
Yeah, I'm for that. A little force. At least we can agree to combine against him during the game itself, and if...
He broke off. Someone had come in. Rising to her feet, Jean Blau said,
Folks, this is the new player who's come to us from Strawman Special, Carol Holt.
Jean advanced to take the girl by the arm and lead her into the room.
Carol, this is Freya and Clem Gaines, Jean and Jack Blau, Sylvanus Angst, Walter and Janice Remington, Stuart Marks, Yule Marks, and over here is your bluff partner, Pete Garden. Pete, this is Carol Holt. We spent 2 hours picking her out for you.
And I'm Mrs. Angst, Mrs. Angst said, entering the room after Carol.
My, but this is an exciting night. Two new people, I understand.
Freya studied Carol Holt and wondered what Pete's reaction was. He showed nothing on the surface, only polite formality as he greeted the girl. He seemed abstracted tonight. Perhaps he hadn't entirely recovered from the shock of the night before. She herself had not, certainly. The girl from Strawman Special, Freya decided, was not too terribly bright-looking. And yet she appeared to have personality. Her hair was nicely bound up in the currently modish rat-nest knot, and her eye makeup was well applied. Carol wore low-heeled slippers, no stockings, and a Madras wrap-around skirt, which made her seem, Freya thought, a trifle hefty at the midsection. But she had nice, fair skin, and her voice, when she spoke, was pleasant enough. Even so, Freya concluded, Pete won't go for her. She's just not his kind. And what is Pete's kind? She asked herself. Me? No, not herself either. Their marriage had been one-sided. She had felt all the deep emotions, and Pete had simply been gloomy, anticipating in some vague way the calamity which would end their relationship, the loss of Berkeley. Pete, Freya reminded him, you still have to roll a 3. Turning to Bill Columine, their spinner, Pete said,
Give me the device and I'll begin now. How many turns am I allowed?
A complex rule governed the situation, and Jack Blau went off to get the rules book to look it up. Together, Bill Columine and Jack Blau decided that tonight Pete was entitled to 6 throws. Carol said,
I didn't realize he hadn't rolled his 3 yet. I hope I haven't made a trip all the way here for nothing.
She seated herself on the arm of a couch, smoothed her skirt over her knees, fair, smooth knees, Freya noted, and lit a cigarette, looking bored. Seated with the spinning device, Pete rolled. His first roll was a 9. To Carol, he said,
I'm doing the best I can.
In his voice, there was an overtone of resentment. His new relationship, Freya saw, was getting into motion in the customary way. She smiled to herself. It was impossible not to take a measure of enjoyment in the situation. Scowling, Pete rolled again. This time it was 10.
We can't start playing anyhow, Janice Remington said brightly. We have to wait for Mr. Luckman to get here.
Carol Holt snorted smoke from her nostrils and said,
Good God, is Lucky Luckman a part of Pretty Blue Fox? Nobody told me that.
She shot a brief, tense glare in Jean Blau's direction. Seated with the spinner, Pete said,
I got it.
He rose stiffly to his feet. Bending, Bill Columine said,
Yeah, you sure did. A real authentic 3.
He picked up the spinner. It was over.
Now the ceremony, and except for waiting on Mr. Luckman, we can go ahead.
Patience Angst said,
I'm vows giver this week, Bill.
I'll administer the ceremony. She brought out the group ring, which she passed to Pete Garten. Pete stood beside Carol Holt, who had not yet recovered from the news about Lucky Luckman. Carol and Peter, we are gathered here to witness your entering into holy matrimony. Terran and Titanian law co-join to empower me to ask you if you voluntarily acquiesce in this sacred and legal binding. Do you, Peter, take Carol to be your lawful wedded wife?
Yes, Pete said glumly, or so it seemed to Freya.
Do you, Carol?
Patience Angst paused, because a new figure had appeared in the doorway of the condominium apartment. It stood silently watching. Lucky Luckman, the big winner from New York, the greatest bindman in the Western world, had arrived. Everyone in the room turned at once to look.
Don't let me interrupt, Luckman said, and did not budge.
Patience then, murmuringly, continued the ceremony to its conclusion.
So this is what the one and only Lucky Luckman looks like, Freya said to herself. A brawny man, stockily built with a round, apple-shaped face, all his coloration pale and straw-like, a peculiar vegetable quality, as if Luckman had been nourished indoors. His hair had a soft, thin texture and did not hide the pinkish scalp. At least Luckman had a clean, well-washed look, Freya observed. His clothes, neutral in cut and quality, showed taste. But his hands... She found herself staring at his hands. Luckman's wrists were thick and furred with the same pale whisker-like hair. The hands themselves were small, the fingers short, and the skin near his knuckles was spotted with what appeared perhaps to be freckles. His voice was oddly high-pitched, mild. She did not like him. There was something wrong with him. He had a capon-like quality, like a defrocked, barred priest. He looked soft where he should be hard. And we really have worked out no strategy against him, Freya said to herself. We don't know how to work together, and now it's too late. I wonder how many of us in this room will be playing a week from now, she thought. We must find a way to stop this man, she said to herself.
And this is my wife, Dottie, Jerome Luckman was saying, introducing to the group an ample, crow-haired, Italian-looking woman who smiled nicely around at them all.
Pete Garten scarcely paid any attention. Let's get the EEG machine in here, he thought. He went over to Bill Calamine and squatted down beside him. It's EEG time, he said softly to Calamine, as a starter.
Yes, Calamine nodded, rose, and disappeared into the other room along with Clem Gaines. Presently he returned with the Crofts-Harrison machine tagging along behind him, a wheeled egg with coiled receptors, rows of meters, sparkling. It had not been used for a long time. The group was quite stable, until now. But now, Pete thought, it's all changed. We have two new members, one of whom is unknown. The other, a patent enemy, who must be fought with all we've got. And he felt the struggle personally because the deed had been his. Luckman, entrenched at the Claremont Hotel in Berkeley, now dwelt in Pete's own bind. What could constitute a more intimate invasion than that? He stared at Luckman, and now the short, light-haired, big bindman from the east stared back. Neither man said anything. There was nothing to say. An EEG, Luckman said, as he made out the Crofts-Harrison machine. An unusual twisting grimace touched his features.
Why not?
He glanced at his wife.
We don't mind, do we?
He held out his arm, and Calamine strapped the anode belt tightly in place.
You won't find any psi power in me,
Luckman said as the cathode terminal was fixed to his temple. He continued to smile. Presently, the Crofts-Harrison machine excreted its short spool of printed tape. Bill Calamine, as official group spinner, examined it, then passed it to Pete.
Together they read the tape, silently conferring. No psionic cephalic activity, Pete decided. At least not at the moment. It might come and go, that's common, certainly. So anyhow, damn it, we can't legitimately bar Luckman on this count. Too bad, he thought, and returned the tape to Calamine, who then passed it to Stu Marks and Sylvanus Angst. Am I clean? Luckman asked genially. He seemed utterly confident, and why not? It was they who should worry, not he. Obviously, Luckman knew it. Walt Remington said hoarsely,
Mr. Luckman, I'm personally responsible for your having this opportunity to invade Pretty Blue Fox.
Oh, Remington, Luckman said.
He extended his hand, but Walt ignored it.
Say, don't blame yourself. I would have gotten in eventually anyhow.
Dottie Luckman spoke up.
That's so, Mr. Remington. Don't feel bad. My husband can get into any group he likes.
Her eyes shone proudly.
What am I? Luckman growled. Some sort of monster. I play fair. Nobody ever accused me of cheating. I play the same as you do, to win.
He looked from one of them to the next, waiting for an answer. He did not seem much perturbed, however. It was evidently a merely formal question. Luckman did not expect to change their feelings, and perhaps he did not even want to. Pete said,
We feel, Mr. Luckman, that you already have more than your share. The game wasn't contrived as an excuse to achieve economic monopoly, and you know it.
He was silent then, because that fairly well expressed it. The others in the group were nodding in agreement.
I tell you what, Luckman said. I like to see everyone happy about things. I don't see any reason for this suspicion and gloom. Maybe you're not very confident in your own abilities. Maybe that's it. Anyhow, how about this? For every California title deed, I win.
He paused, enjoying their tension.
I'll contribute to the group a title deed for a town in some other state. So no matter what happens, you'll all still wind up bindmen. Maybe not here on the coast, but somewhere.
He grinned, showing teeth so regular that, to Pete Garden, anyhow, they seemed palpably false.
Thanks, Freya said frigidly.
No one else spoke. Is it meant to be an insult? Pete wondered. Maybe Luckman sincerely intends it. Maybe he's that primitive, that naive about human feelings.
The door opened, and a Vug came in. It was, Pete saw, the District Commissioner, U.S. Cummings.
What did it want, he wondered. Had the Titanians heard about Luckman's move to the West Coast? Now the Vug, after its fashion, greeted the members of the group.
What do you want? Bill Calamine asked it sourly. We're just about to sit down to play.
The Vug's thoughts came to them.
Sorry for this intrusion, Mr. Luckman. What is the meaning of your presence here? Produce your document of validation that entitles you to enter this group.
Ah, come on, Luckman said. You know I've got the deed.
He reached into his coat, brought out a large envelope.
What is this, a gag?
Extending pseudopodia, the Vug inspected the deed, then returned it to Luckman.
You neglected to notify us of your entry into this group.
I don't have to, Luckman said. It's not mandatory.
Nevertheless, U.S. Cummings declared, it's protocol. What is your intention here at Pretty Blue Fox?
Luckman said, I intend to win.
The Vug seemed to contemplate him. It was silent for a time.
That's my legal right,
Luckman added. He seemed a little nervous.
You don't have any power to intercede in this. You're not a Masters.
Let me refer you to the Concordat of 2095 signed between your military and the UN. All you can do is make recommendations and give assistance to us when it's requested. I didn't hear anybody request your presence here in this room tonight.
He looked around at the group for agreement. Bill Calamine said to the Vug,
"We can handle this."
"That's right," Stuart Marks said.
"So beat it, Vuggy, go on."
He went to get the Vug stick. It was propped up in the corner of the room. U.S. Cummings, with no further thoughts in their direction, departed. As soon as it had gone, Jack Blau said,
"Let's begin playing."
"Right," Bill Calamine agreed. Producing his key, he went to the locked closet. A moment later, he was laying out the large game board on the table in the center of the room. The others began drawing up their chairs, making themselves comfortable, deciding whom they wanted to sit beside. Coming up to Pete, Carol Holt said,
"We probably won't do too well at first, Mr. Garden, since we're not used to each other's styles."
It was time, Pete judged, to tell her about Joe Schilling. "Listen," he said, "I hate to say this, but you and I may not be partners very long."
"Oh?" Carol said. "Why not?"
She eyed him. Pete said, "I'm frankly more interested in winning Berkeley back than I am in anything else. Than in luck, as the popular phrase has it, in the biological sense." Despite the fact he thought that both the Terran and Titanian authorities who set up the game considered it primarily a means to that end rather than to the economic end.
"You've never seen me play," Carol said.
She walked swiftly over to the corner of the room and stood with her hands behind her back, regarding him.
"I'm quite good."
"Perhaps good," Pete agreed, "but hardly good enough to beat Luckman. And that's the issue. I'll play with you tonight, but tomorrow I want to bring in someone else. No offense meant."
"But I am offended," Carol said.
He shrugged.
"Then you'll have to be offended."
"Who is this person you want to bring in?"
"Joe Schilling."
"The rare record man?"
The girl's honey-colored eyes widened with amazement.
"But—"
"I know, Luckman beat him," Pete said. "But I don't think he can do it again. Schilling is a good friend of mine. I have confidence in him."
"Which is more," Carol Holt said, "than you can say about me, right? You're not even interested in seeing how I play. You've already decided. I wonder why you bothered to go through with the marriage ceremony."
Pete said,
"For tonight."
"I suggest," Carol said, "that we not even bother about tonight."
Her cheeks had flushed dark red now. She was quite angry.
"Now listen," Pete said, uneasy now, wanting to mollify her. "I didn't intend to—"
"You don't want to hurt me," Carol said, "but you have. Very much. At Strawman Special, my friends had all the respect in the world for me. I'm not used to this."
She blinked rapidly.
"For God's sake," Pete said, horrified.
He took her by the hand, propelled her from the room and outside into the night darkness. "Listen, I just wanted to prepare you in case I brought Joe Schilling in. Berkeley was my place of bind, and I'm just not going to give up on it, don't you understand? It has nothing to do with you. You may be the best bluff player on earth for all I know." He took hold of her by the shoulders, gripping her. "Now let's stop this bickering and go back in. They're starting to play." Carol sniffed.
"Just a minute."
She found a handkerchief in her skirt pocket and blew her nose.
"Come on, you fellows," Bill Calamine called from within the apartment.
Sylvanus Angst appeared in the doorway.
"We're starting,"
he giggled, seeing them.
"The economic part right now, Mr. Garden, if you please."
Together, Pete and Carol returned to the lighted living room and the game.
"We were discussing our strategy," Pete said to Calamine.
"But as regards to what?" Janice Remington said, and winked.
Freya glanced first at Pete and then at Carol. She said nothing, however. The others were already involved in carefully watching Luckman.
They did not care about anything else. Title deeds were starting to appear. Reluctantly, one by one, they were put into the pot basket.
Mr. Luckman, Yule Marks said bluntly, you have to put up the Berkeley deed. It's the only California real estate you own.
She and the rest of the group watched intently as Luckman deposited the large envelope in the basket.
I hope, Yule said, that you lose it and never show up here again.
You're an outspoken woman, Luckman said with a wry smile. His expression then seemed to harden. It became rigid, fixed in place. Pete thought, he intends to beat us. He's made up his mind. He has no more liking for us than we have for him. It's going to be a dirty, hard business.
I withdraw my offer, Luckman said, of giving you title deeds to towns outside California.
He picked up the stack of numbered cards and began to shuffle them magnificently. In view of your hostility, it's clear that we can't have even the semblance of cordiality.
That's right, Walt Remington said in answer.
No one else spoke, but it was as evident to Luckman as it was to Pete Garton that each person in the room felt the same way.
Draw for first play, Bill Calamine said, and took a card from the shuffled deck.
To himself, Jerome Luckman thought,
these people are going to pay for their attitude. I came here legally and decently. I did my part and they wouldn't have that.
His turn to draw a card came. He drew, and it was a 17.
My luck's showing up already, he said to himself.
He lit a Delicato cigarette, leaned back in his chair, and watched as the others drew.
It's a good thing Dave Moutreau refused to come here, Luckman realized. The precog was right. They did have the EEG machine to try out as a ploy. They would have had him dead to rights.
Evidently you go first, Luckman, Calamine said. With your 17, you're high man. He seemed resigned, as did the others.
Yeah, the Luckman luck,
Luckman said to them as he reached for the round metal spinner. Watching Pete out of the corner of her eye, Freya Gaines thought he and she had a fight outside there. Carol, when she came back in, looked as if she had been crying.
Too bad, Freya said to herself with relish. They won't be able to play as partners, she knew.
Carol won't be able to put up with Pete's melancholy, his hypochondria. And in her, he's simply not going to find a woman who'll put up with him. I know he'll turn back to me in a relationship outside the game. He'll have to, or crack up emotionally.
It was her turn to play. This initial round was played without the element of bluff. The visible spinner was used, not the cards. Freya spun, obtained a 4.
Tam, she thought, as she moved her piece 4 spaces ahead on the board. That brought her to a sadly familiar square. Excise tax, pay $500. She paid, silently. Janice Remington, the banker, accepted the bills. How tense I am, Freya thought. Everyone here is, including Luckman himself. Which of us, she wondered, will be the first to call Luckman on a bluff? Who will have the courage? And if they challenge him, will they succeed? Will they be right? She herself shrank from it. Not me, she said to herself. Pete would, she decided. He'll be the first. He really hates the man. It was Pete's turn now. He spun a 7 and began moving his piece. His face was expressionless.